Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Why is 6.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Gavin Stone's here. It's going to be a crime day.
Hey.
Yeah, whenever there's crime, you're in the room.
Yeah, but I've bought an alibi.
Yeah, never works. Never works for you.
No, tell me about it. We'll have to get some inspiration from the experts, I think.
Yeah, that's it. So let's see, we've got one today. We've got a former police officer and detective who writes books now. So his latest book is called Choices and Chances. It's a Cade Taylor novel. Michael Hearns, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's good to see you and be here with y'all.
So, listen, Michael, you were, an officer and a detective, and you've done all this sort of investigations and stuff. What made you go from that into the crazy world of writing? Because there's, you know, a lot of insanity in writing.
You know, there is a lot of insanity in writing, and I think that we would not be all doing it if we knew the trials and tribulations of doing it. The way I found my way into the author world is I had retired from the police department and started working as a technical advisor for film and TV. And I got a lot of people asking me to write a book. And I think a lot of them wanted me to write a tell-all, a book more about me or about the life I had. And I really didn't want to go down that route. So I created a fictional character named Cade Taylor. And I wrote my first novel in 2020. It was called Trust No One. And I thought it'd be a one and done, but there was such a ardent desire from people reaching out to me about the second book. And so I wrote a second one, and then the legion of Cade Taylor fans grew, and they've grown ever since then. And the third book was called One More Move. And the latest book, which released last month, is called Choices and Chances. So there are four Cade Taylor novels out there right now, and that's where we are.
Right. Well, was there something that gave you confidence but to write something that people could, you know, criticize, of course, but, you know, to actually get out in public where people can actually see what you're writing and stuff? Was there some reason you could feel comfortable doing that?
Yeah, you do put yourself out there for high exposure and vulnerability, and you put yourself out there for praise, and you put yourself out there for critique as well. The confidence level, I think, was just I didn't really know how far the market was going to go, and I thought that maybe just a few handful of people might read it, and I would get my my pros and cons about it from that. But the books actually took off a little bit faster than I imagined, and it's been a good ride so far. And people seem to enjoy Kay Taylor. I think what they like the most about the Kay Taylor books is the authenticity. They're seeing an aspect of law enforcement that many people don't normally see in film, TV, or books. I spent 10 years in real life undercover in the Medellin and Cali drug cartels as a money launderer and drug trafficker. And I was, for all intents and purposes, part of the actual real Miami Vice. So bringing that experience and bringing that aspect of my life into the write-in helps to make the write-in a lot more authentic.
Right. So you're actually relying on a lot of your own experience on the scene of doing policing, I guess, to get into the book?
Yeah, there's a lot of commentary about write what you know. This is obviously something that I know very well. I did 10 years of my life doing it. So bringing some of my real life experiences, some of my knowledge, some of the information I gleaned in that environment has helped to fill out the plot lines and create story arcs for the book.
So what do you think, you know, people get wrong about undercover work and law enforcement in general in the public, you know, from watching the movies and stuff? Because, you know, Gavin, an ex-spy and stuff, like, people have a lot of ideas about what spies are or cops are, and they're all pretty perfect in the movies, right? So what do you think they get wrong?
I think we were raised, I was born in the 1960s, and I think a lot of us were raised with a lot of television shows, at least in the United States, about law enforcement and cops. And I think watching those TV shows, we feel, the general public feels, they have a complete and utter understanding of that lifestyle. You would never tell a surgeon how to operate. You would never tell an airline pilot to, you know, trim the tab at 32,000 feet and to bank left or bank right. But we all seem to think we know how to tell the police officer or the detective how to do their job because we've seen it portrayed so often, so many times. We've seen it portrayed in different parts of law enforcement, different sexes, different ethnicities, different cities, different everything. But the reality of it is that we all don't police the same entirely from Spokane to Seattle to Savannah, Georgia. I mean, it changes. And South Florida, Miami in particular, I often joke that we invent crime in Miami. We should patent it. And some of the things that we encounter in South Florida is a little different than some other parts of the country. The job has its inherent risk and dangers no matter where you are. But sometimes certain cities, certain locales of the world, certain locales of the nation bring a different flavor. And in Miami, we see that a lot.
Now, your character, Cade Taylor, how do you relate to that character? How do you write that character? How do you see that character? Do you hear him? Is it like watching a movie for you? Or maybe explain your experience in writing your main character.
Well, because I worked as a technical advisor for film and TV, I oftentimes tell people I write in a cinematic perspective. I'm very detail-oriented in my writing, very descriptive. I think the readers today are a lot more sophisticated than we give them credit. And if I said to them, well, you know, me and Alan and Gavin, we got in the car and we drove off to Dallas. And then we got to Dallas. Gavin wanted to go to the restaurant. And I'm like, well, hold on. What do you mean the three of you got in the car? Where did you go? What did you do? What did you see? What did you talk about? So with Cade Taylor, there's a lot of description. Many people in today's world are very visual. They were raised in television or raised in movies. So even though they're readers, they read with a descriptive mind. So I try to help them along with the description. So my life experiences help to colorize those descriptions and to colorize those stories because I'm speaking from an informed point of view. Just like Gavin were to write about a spy novel, it's his life, it's his essence that's coming through that. And the same thing with myself.
I've got to ask about Cade Taylor. I'm wondering if you went through the same thing as I did. How many names did you go through before you finally got to Cade Taylor? And what was the original kind of, or what were some of the alternatives? This is a bit like choosing a name for a newborn baby, isn't it, when you're trying to get to the one that's the right one for your main protagonist?
Yeah, that's an incredibly good question. In the Cade Taylor novels, I don't really fully describe Cade Taylor too well. I describe a few things about him, but I let the reader make their own interpretations. So there's a vagueness to him that I allow the reader to fulfill in their own mind. When it comes to his name, it was my wife. My wife, who I adore and I think is just an absolute genius, she pulled me up. She said, listen, two first names always sound well together. And it was she who named him Cade Taylor.
Oh, wow. Next time I need inspiration for a character name, then I'm going to give you a call up and ask you to put your wife on, if that's okay.
No, she's not here, but she is, she's just wonderful, and she's been a big supporter of this entire process.
Brilliant. That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so listen, do you have a kind of a subtext or some sort of a meaning or something you want the reader to take away from the book besides the excitement and the entertainment of the story? Is there something underneath it that you hope that they catch on to?
You know, I don't know if that's done fully with intention. A lot of the books do have a subliminal theme that runs through them. Once again, it was my wife and the editor, Julie Hutchins, who picked up on that theme. Many readers don't oftentimes pick up on there's a subtle theme in all four books. And what I would like to see them take away is, first of all, you hit the nail on the head, enjoyment. I want them to be captivated. I want them to enjoy their reading process. I want them to embark on this journey with Cade Taylor and feel happy that they made a wise choice in reading this book. As far as them taking anything away, I don't really have any agenda, and I don't have any ramifications of what I expect of the reader, other than I just hope they enjoy what they read.
So now the action and the violence within the book, are you conscious about how you write that in a book?
I am. The action, the violence, the language is all endemic to that lifestyle. I don't think readers want to read a spy novel where somebody hang glides into Paris and drops bombs and stuff like that. It's kind of impractical. The life and the cases and the ordeals that Cade Taylor go through are very real and genuine and authentic. And his reaction to it is all very authentic. Cade Taylor's very street smart, and I've tried to bring a level of investigation and case solvability in these novels that, once again, you don't normally see in books, movies, or TV.
You know, you're just describing Gavin's last book, you know.
Oh, man, I hope not. I hope not, because I've already warmed up to him, and I like him a lot. I don't want that to happen.
So I'm just wondering about your antagonists in these, because in a lot of like kind of crime books and crime movies, you generally have a good guy versus bad guy, or you know there's one kind of agenda. And I know, like, from other law enforcement people that I've spoken to, that fighting crime is a bit like, you know, kind of having that constant waterfall of enemies that you've got to kind of try and battle against. So with that in mind, I mean, how do you go about writing your antagonists here? Do you kind of have something in mind from the very beginning and say, I'm going to make this guy, you know, a drug lord or whatever, and this is how Cade Taylor's going to stumble across this case? Or how do you just write it and see how it goes?
You know, it's a little bit of all that. It's like a melting pot of all that. But I do know that with the four novels that have been written so far, I kind of know the very, very, very beginning, and I kind of have an idea how I want it to end. And then the writing process kind of takes me along with it. I become kind of like the train conductor. You know, I may not be going to the final journey, but I'm still on the train riding with it. So as I'm writing the books and the novels, I'm actually taking the journey along with the reader. And then when it's finished, I'm able to walk away, whereas the reader gets to immerse themselves in it. As far as like creating criminals, villains, bad guys, bad ladies, whatever it may be, I've been very lucky so far to pepper the entire population. You're really not going to know all the times who the good guy and the bad guy is in the Cade Taylor novels. And sometimes there's a lot of murky gray areas too.
Oh, yeah. It's a bit like the world I come from. So do you ever come across somebody in your own day-to-day life and they kind of annoy you and you think, right, that's it, you're going in a book?
No.
And you're going to die.
I think maybe you're right. Maybe you should have interviewed my wife instead of me, because she said to me one time, she said, people are going to read your novels for two reasons. One, to see if they're in it, and two, to see if they're not in it. And I think people from my past – I originally started to read the books thinking, once again, are they in it? Are they not in it? And I think they've come to realize that it's all fiction.
Got you. Yeah. I tell you what, that is a really great trick, though, because somebody I know, another author I know, he sent me a message not so long back, and he said, I promised I was going to put you in my next book. I have, and it's just been released. Now, I bought the book purely on the concept of me being in there, trying to figure out where I am and how I've been written. And I thought, what a great marketing idea. I wonder if he tells just about everybody that they're in the book somewhere. So they all buy it.
What I have done, and I'll let you in on a little secret that I've never said in any interviews before, like when the first novel came out, Trust No One, a woman read it, and she reached out to me, and she read it just after the death of her adult daughter. And she said it really helped her a lot, because she was from Miami, and Miami plays a large part in the book, so it probably elicits a synapsis or a dopamine level in her brain when she sees familiar locations and things like that. And so she told me about her daughter. I said, you know, I'm going to put her in the next book. And from book number two, Grasp and Smoke, book number three, One More Move, and now Choices and Chances, I have slipped in someone who has passed on and given them life in the pages as a homage to let them kind of live on a little bit. And only that one reader knows that. I don't make a proclamation about it, other than now telling you two guys. I don't make a proclamation about it or anything, but in every book, there's someone who's a character who has passed on that I've found a way to, via name or via description, put them in to give them a little longevity in their life.
Oh, that's lovely. I really like that. On behalf of everybody, I'm going to thank you personally for that.
Thank you, Gavin.
Things are wonderful, Jesse.
Thank you, Gavin.
Yeah, Gavin, you're going to be murdered in the next book. Don't be too quick. So Miami's important, obviously, and the scene and all that stuff. Do you write the setting assets, the character, too?
Yeah, I've come to realize Miami is as big a character as any of the characters are in the book. And the reason why is because Miami is one of those cities where you may not have lived there, but you've at least visited. And through television shows like Miami Vice and CSI Miami and Burn Notice and Dexter, even going back to Flipper, the American public has seen Miami played out in their TV screens their entire life. And now you have an opportunity to see the sides of Miami you don't normally see. You still see the subtropical fauna and flora and landscape, but you're recognizing that there's a lot of darkness in the shadows too as well.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. It's like the UK. A lot of dark, you know.
Mostly when I'm here.
They bright the room up.
That's it, yeah. They can't wait for me to leave. Yeah.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, I mean, Miami, I'm actually going to end up buying the books myself just to read, because I obviously, having lived in Miami for a while, you know, it's going to bring back a lot of great memories for me, you know, going down to South Point to watch the sunset and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's got a fantastic charm, hasn't it, with kind of, it's got all that beauty and that layer underneath that you mentioned, you know, that kind of, you can be in an Art Deco area 1 minute, and 5 minutes drive down the road, you're in danger.
Yeah, Miami, you know, in Crush No One, I said that Miami's where reality comes to rehearse. And it basically is Eden's evil twin. It's geographically, physically a beautiful place, but it's a large city, and it has a lot going on there. It's also a peninsula. It's the end of a peninsula. And a lot of people come into South Florida, and long before the computer age, they came to South Florida to escape. They could be running from the IRS. They could be running from an ex-wife or husband. They could be running from something they did illegal, but it was a drop-off point, and it always has been. Kay Taylor is a Coral Gables detective. Miami has 28 municipalities, Miami, Miami Beach, Miami Shores, Coral Gables. Well, he's a Coral Gables detective, and Coral Gables has over 40 miles of inland canals just in their jurisdiction. So there's a lot of places for nefarious activity, murder, money laundering, drug smuggling. And because Kay Taylor's a vice intelligence narcotic officer, this is the elements of his life that he works with. So he's knee deep in all this stuff.
Yeah, something you obviously know so much about. I know you've got a website, I believe it's called launderingmoney.com. Do anybody ever go to that, like, thinking that it's a service you offer, as in, you know, kind of criminals, laundrymoney.com, let's see if they can do and what their charges are.
I have two websites. There's michaelhearns.com, which is all about the books, but Laundering Money is when I teach anti-money laundering to law enforcement, banks, financial institutions. And in answer to your question, Gavin, yes. When the website first went live 13, 15, 18 years ago, I don't know when it was, back then you could track your stats a lot easier than you can now. And I would see like tons of hits from Algeria and Yemen and and, you know, Uzbekistan and places like that. And I was like, you know, this is, and I think people at first did think they could learn how to do it there. They didn't realize it was detection and prevention, not, you know, application and usage, you know.
Well, now, so listen, a lot of these stories, when you're writing, you're putting a lot of yourself into it. And I guess you probably feel a lot of things that you put your characters through and in the stories. How do you think each book changes you?
You know, once again, it's an incredibly good question. I think as I've written each novel, I've left a lot of me in the books, and I've also taken a lot out of the books as well. It's not so much that it changes me. I think it mostly refines a lot of the life I led. I think, like, Gavin and I could both agree that our lives have been much like a sea urchin. You know, there's a center spot with all these spikes that go off in different directions. And then I've been able to, I think, shave off some of these spikes and make myself more into the center, if that makes any sense. I think it's given me a central base to work from. And it's been cathartic in some ways, but most ways it's been a pleasure to illuminate to the readers what that lifestyle is like, kind of peeling off the veneer and letting the readers understand that, you know, that lifestyle, being undercover in Miami, is not an easy thing to do.
Certainly not. Do you ever have concerns that some of this could catch up with you in your private life?
No, I mean, the books are fiction. That's, you know, my private life, I think, is doing quite well in that respect. I don't feel that there's any repercussions or danger or anything like that. This is entertainment. This is hopefully enjoyable reading, and that's what it is.
Do you find yourself still policing in your mind? Like when you when someone's been some sort of an officer in law enforcement, even spies and stuff, even the ones I've known, they tend to still be looking for crime or looking for people to do things wrong, not necessarily outward going after it. But, you know, you go to a store and you hear a paper crumple, you're thinking someone's stealing something. You know what I mean? Do you still have that policing mentality?
I don't feel I'm as sharp as I used to be, only because I'm getting older and I'm also becoming further and further detached from that lifestyle with each and every day that passes. I have a master's degree in investigative criminal psychology, and I've worked a couple of serial homicide cases. And my wife or someone will say to me, "Hey, did you see that article about that serial killer who did this or did that?" And I'll say, "No." And they're like, "Well, aren't you interested?" And I'll say, "No." Unless I'm directly asked to be involved as a consultant or something, I don't want to get entangled with that, because it takes a lot of emotional bandwidth to do that. And as we get older, you know, the runway of our life is a lot shorter. And unless I'm tasked with doing something, I really don't look for it or try to delve into it. I think we all have situational awareness because of the life we've led, but do I look at everybody with a castful, suspicious eye? No, Gavin will like this. my wife and I are in second marriages with each other, and there's adult kids from both marriages. And the entire family calls me Bond Goo because they've heard I did all this high-speed stuff, but they see me fumbling around like an idiot. So is he James Bond or is he Mr. Magoo? So I'm Bond Goo, you know?
I do like that. I get the same thing from time to time. I'll mess up and somebody will turn around and say something, and you were meant to be intelligence. I'm like, yeah, okay, thanks, don't rub it in.
I totally commiserate with Gavin on that. I mean, I try not to tell people what I used to do and how I used to do things, because I think they expect a lot out of me, and I'm just really not in that place anymore.
Yeah, it's difficult to kind of leave it behind when you're trying to utilize it as leverage in your writing. So I've got to ask, did you find, I mean, I'm kind of asking for my own selfish reasons here, so you'll have to forgive me, but did you find when you were writing your book that it was in some way therapeutic when you were putting pen to paper, as it were?
I don't know if therapeutic is the opportune word. The word I used earlier was cathartic. But what it basically is it's allowing me to channel and funnel some of the nuances and aspects of the life I lived into a digestible format. Trying to explain to somebody the work you did, Gavin, or the work that I did, it's almost like speaking a different language, because it's an incomprehensible environment and incomprehensible lifestyle to some people. So by putting it into a 320-page novel, it allows me to put it into, like, once again, like I said, a digestible format that we can now look at.
I suppose it's great, because I should imagine you probably want a lot of your friends and family members to read this as well, so they've got more of a concept of what's happened in your world. Even though it's fiction, at least they'll have more of an accurate idea.
Yeah, my son will read it, and he'll call me up, and then we'll be on the phone, and he'll be like, hey, I'm reading One More Move, or I'm reading Choices and Chances. I'll say, oh, cool. Where you at? He goes, well, you just did this, and you just did that. I go, it's not me, it's Cade Taylor. He's like, yeah, I know, but it's you. So, you know, I get that a lot, too.
Yeah, I should imagine. And I've put a lot of the things in my book that I've done from experience, very much like yourself. It's built on everything that I've been through, but not all in one particular, like, assignment, as it were, you know. So with regards to the titles, I love the very kind of snappy titles. I love the Trust No One, because that's how I kind of generally live my life. Was that something that you kind of went out to kind of deliberately go, I'm going to have a short, punchy, snappy title for each and every book, or is it, have you decided as you've gone along, or where's the inspiration for the titles come from?
Well, Trust No One was always a mantra in our lifestyle. You really, in that world, you truthfully cannot trust anybody. Good, bad, or indifferent. And so for 10 years, you're living this world where you don't trust anybody. So yes, Trust No One was the debut novel. The second novel is titled Grasping Smoke. And that's a term we use in criminal profiling, where you can see, you can understand, you can decipher what's in front of you, but you can't get your hands around it. And it's as difficult as grasping smoke. So that's where that title came from. One More Move, plays into the theme of the book, and Kay Taylor realizes that he is totally vexed, but even when you think he is totally down and out, he has one more move, like a chess piece, like a chess game. And then Choices and Chances, you have a chance to make a choice, and you have a choice to take a chance. This is how that life is.
Wow. And have you got a fifth on the way, or have you finally learned your lesson?
There's always potential for a fifth, and it's really strange, Gavin, because it's kind of ruminating in the back of my head. I'm starting and trying to write an entirely different book about a guy in Los Angeles. And, as I'm plucking away at this guy in Los Angeles, Kay Taylor's like, hey, we could do this again, you know, you don't have to leave me here in the parking lot. We can do this again.
Use them and throw them away.
Yeah.
So listen, do you keep some sort of a reference, like some people call it a Bible, something to keep track of what goes on throughout the series so that you don't, you know, do a wrong eye color or make a mistake in book five type thing?
No, not entirely. The books take place in 1998. At least that's where the first one started. And people ask me, they're like, well, why did you choose 1998? And I'll be, I needed to justify why Kay Taylor had a pager. That was the full impetus behind that. And so all four books take place in the period of 1 year. And unlike other books, with Kay Taylor, they're written in the first person, and there is no break. You go to bed with him, you wake up with him. The next day, you know, you go to lunch with him, you go to dinner, you handle the case, you go to bed, you wake up again. And all four books take place over a span of like 6 to 8 days of his life. And there is no break in there. You're with him. So many of the readers have informed me that they feel like they're right with him in the drug deal. They're right with him in the shootout. They're right with him driving in the car, because they're immersed with him totally from start to finish. There is no gap. So there's an intensity there. There really is.
Did you kind of know where you were going to go with each book ahead of time? Like, when you do a series like this, do you kind of have a beginning and a middle and an end, and then you're putting each book as it goes? Did you kind of do it that way, or is it just as it comes, it goes?
As it comes, it goes. All four books are standalone. It's ideal if you read them in order, but if you don't read them in order, there won't be any spoilers and you won't be lost or left out. It helps if you read them in, it helps if you read them in order, because there's a lot of, there's a thread that runs through all of them. There's a central bank of characters that he deals with that pretty much show up in all of the books. The people in his office, his commanding officer and stuff, they all show up in all four books. But his actual cases and the work he's doing, the nefarious situations he's involved in, they're all totally different.
Interesting. So listen, how do people, do you like to interact with readers and people? Do you have social media accounts? What website do you like people to come to? How do people find Michael?
I do very much so. There's michaelhearns.com. There's also author Michael Hearns Facebook page. There's an Instagram page, the same author Michael Hearns. There's a Twitter account. I try to interact as much as I can. I make myself available, approachable, and accessible.
You doing any of the shows coming up, or you go to any book writing shows or anything like that?
I have not as of yet. I'm eyeballing the Miami Book Fair in the fall, but I haven't really committed yet.
Yeah, they're good. They're a good networking tool, you know?
They are.
Yeah.
The writing community's been incredibly gracious at every level. I don't see anybody who is out to undermine anybody else. I think they're very supportive and very kind. You know, I stepped into this with a cold plunge, and I'm still swimming, so.
Well, the water's warm. Come on in. There's lots of room.
Unless you peed in it, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's, again, you know, let's not talk about gammon.
Can't help it when I get into that warm water, sorry.
Yeah, well, one day.
Yeah, the writing community, to be fair, they are such a wonderful, open people. You know, you can contact them, ask for advice, and I've just got praise for everybody in this community, to be fair. They're really helpful, wonderful.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
and reviews, do you follow reviews, or do you stay away from that whole part of it?
My reviews aren't stratospheric. I don't have 9,000 reviews. I think websites like Yelp and other Goodreads and things have allowed everybody to be their own critic. And, you know, 95, 98% of them are really good. I feel very bad for anybody. And it could be a restaurant review. It could be a theater review. It could be a book review. But, yeah, I picture some guy, you know, laying on his deathbed going, I wish I'd written one more negative review. I mean, it takes just as much energy to say something kind as it does to say something negative. So, you know, plot accordingly.
Yeah, I sort of think personally that over the years, a lot of bad reviews come from people that are in a bad place at the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
it comes from them.
What's the intrinsic value of that? You know, are you trying to steer someone away from a sale? I've never seen anybody say, don't buy this book. They always say things like, and I'm not talking so much about myself. I'm talking about other reviews I've seen. They'll say things like, I didn't like this, didn't like that. But that, you know, putting your opinion out there like that, once again, there's been plenty of times I've gone to dinner and the restaurant was terrible. And I don't go on Yelp and bash them. I mean, that's, you know, the word will get out on its own. You don't need me to be the bell ringer on that one.
Right. Yeah. No, it's better that way. You know, avoid the noise and go keep moving forward with what you're doing.
Forward trajectory, eyes forward.
Well, we appreciate you being here.
I appreciate being here. Thank you, guys.
Of course. Book is called Choices and Chances, Cade Taylor novel, and Michael Hearns is our guest, who's the author. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.